time now to go to Sunday school with the professor.
Hey, Professor, take it easy, will you?
Giants third base coach Ron Wotus with Marty Lorenz.
I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helper.
On your home of Giants baseball.
Good answer. Like the way you think.
KNBR 104.5 and 680, the sports leader. Brought to you by River Islands, one of the country's top-selling master plan communities just across the Altamont in Lathrop. Where else can you live on a lake, next door to a park, or walking distance to your kid's new school? With 10 new neighborhoods, River Islands is the one place you can't afford to miss.
All right, it's not Sunday school, it's Saturday night school with the professor, Ron Wotus. Well, how are you?
Marty, I'm doing well. It is Saturday night, hour delay, so new time for us here tonight.
Yeah, a little bit later. It's sort of like a night game, a little bit of maybe a rain delay. But, yeah, we roll with the show, and Bill will join us in just a few minutes as well. A couple of things. One about River Islands, just listening to the spot, Woe. And, you know, I was talking to Colleen this week from River Islands, and she brought up a great point that, you know, with rentals in the Bay Area, and I know this quite well, you can get a two-bedroom apartment for $3,000, $3,400. At River Islands, you can shop online. The website has been rebuilt. The floor plans are there. There's counselors available. And you could get a home in the 4,000s range. And you could have a beautiful home with the trails and everything else. And I hadn't thought of it with the rentals, but you could be an hour from, you know, the core Bay Area and be out in River Islands.
Yeah, well, I know a little bit about this, as Lori, as you well know, is a realtor herself. So, you know, I talked to her quite a bit about these types of things. And we talked about a couple weeks ago how River Islands was kind of ahead of a curve, zooming to their students, continuing to teach them with the social distancing, which I know a lot of schools in the Bay Area and all over the country that are doing. But they've re-upped their website and to make it, more within the times here so people can continue to shop, look at the homes, and get a better idea what they're getting. So you're right. The prices are fantastic, and it's not that far from the Bay Area. And you look at all the amenities they have there,
really?
It's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I hadn't thought about it in terms of rentals. But when you look at what you're paying for a rental, what you're paying for a home out there, there's no comparison. Plus, you got the lakes, the parks, all the trails, the charter schools, and everything else. So good. I'm glad that Colleen sent that to me, and I'm glad we could share that with everybody. Well, you had an interesting week this week. I know you did a little video. The coaches got together and doing some things for Junior Giants. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, a couple weeks ago, Cap asked us if we'd be willing to help the Junior Giants Community Fund out. And the Junior Giants, not the Community Fund, but they oversee the Junior Giants. But in essence, you know, if we'd be able to help out the Junior Giants, and if we could all make some videos at home that we can send to the kids in the program, because they're having a tough time, right? Everybody and their kids, they're all, you know, socially distancing. They're at home. They're not in school, and they need activities. So it was a perfect opportunity for us to give them a little bit of baseball and get to see the coaches, and hopefully they'll enjoy getting these videos. So we sent them everything. There was some real neat stuff sent. I know the pitching guys were doing some stuff in their house. Bales had his kids throwing against the wall with softballs with a target up there and making it a point game. So it reached the whole gamut from, you know, the younger kids, 7, 6, 7, 8, and even touched on some kids that are older in the program. So those will be going out to the kids, I think, just sometime this week.
Oh, nice. Well, last week we saw Joe Kelly working out at home, and he put one through the bedroom window, so I hope nothing happened like that for you, right?
No, you know, I have a neighbor up here named Cole, and he actually helped me shoot the video. We just did a little wall ball like we talked about. I think it was last week. You know, you don't have to have someone to play catch. You have thrown that ball off a wall, work on your fielding positions, backhands, forehands, and he helped me with he did the drills for me, so I get to stay behind the camera and just talk about it.
Oh, good. All right, Bill Lasky joins us. Bill, how are you this week?
I'm doing good, Marty and Ron. Both of you guys doing okay. Another week's gone by. Of course, it's getting hotter in Mesa, and it's getting warmer up here in Northern California. But I tell you what, the heat's going to come fast to you, Marty. And as you were telling me earlier in the week, it's hitting 100 already, and you're ready to come to the Northern California.
Starting to think about it. I'm starting to think about it. And if they ever get baseball down here, I always can come back if I had to. But we'll see. Bill, the interesting thing this week is that not only Arizona and Florida being considered, but the two Texas stadiums, the new one in Arlington and, of course, the one in Houston, as a possibility. So I guess if you keep everything under a dome, nothing's impossible. Well, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I think that, look, they're going to try to do everything they can to open, you know, baseball up when it's safe and for everybody around the country. I know some states are opening up, and, you know, baseball wants to be ready for that. And, you know, what they're looking into is, you know, every possible scenario. And the ones that you hear thrown around with Florida, Texas, and Arizona, you know, seems like it's much more controllable, but we'll wait and see. You know, I don't have any new information on any of that. But as time goes by, we know there's very intelligent people looking into the alternatives, how they can get baseball going.
Yeah, we'll see. But we did have the football draft this week, and it made me think of a couple of things. One, and Bill, I'll ask you first, the best two-way player, football, baseball player, that you remember, and a couple come to mind for me. Let's see what you come up with.
I think the most obvious one would be Bo Jackson. He would be the guy that you think of right off the bat. Of course, Deion Sanders played a little baseball and football. But Bo Jackson, I got to face him at the end of my career, and he just had so much power. And the thrust with his legs and how fast the whip in his swing was. And he was an all-around great player, especially in football, too. And he was a great running back. The power, the explosiveness, and the speed. So I would have to think the most obvious one would be Bo Jackson.
Well,
yeah, I have to agree with Bill. You mean, obviously, there was who was a football player there for the Denver Broncos, John Elway. He did it. I didn't see him play at all, and he mentioned Deion Sanders, who actually played for the Giants. I heard good things about him as a teammate and watched him. A very speedy guy, obviously, had some talent on the baseball field. But I think there's no comparison. I was fortunate as well. I went to Major League Camp with the Kansas City Royals in 1987, fighting for a utility job, and Bo was on that team in spring training, so I got to spend the whole month with him. And what a physical specimen, strength, speed, the whole ball of wax, and he used to kick my butt in the pool table too, so he could do it all, just like the commercial. Bo knows. He knows pool as well as football and baseball.
Yeah, I guess my you know, the Bo Jackson moment's the All-Star game. He hit the home run off Rick Rushel, just crushed it. Remember that? Then remember he climbed up the wall to catch a ball? And, you know, he went up and did the Spider-Man thing. And then he made a throw, I think, from, like, the warning track right to the plate. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, he was amazing. I'll give you one. How about Brian Jordan? Remember him from the Braves?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
Didn't he play for the Falcons? I thought he played for the Falcons.
He did.
I could be wrong. Did he?
Yeah, he did play with the Falcons. He sure did. He was a great athlete. He was more football than baseball when he came out of college, but he was sensational. He's another one of those hard bodies that just have speed and so much thrust. And, yeah, he played with the Falcons, I think, maybe even when Deion Sanders was there. I think they kind of, you know, comboed it for a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to give you one. Well, what about Samardzija?
Yeah, well, he didn't do it professionally, but he certainly plays baseball with a football mentality. I mean, I love hearing about his days at Notre Dame, and you know, he's kind of a throwback athlete, you know, where he grew up and playing football. Of course, he's got that tough guy mentality. He brings it out on the baseball field, and he's a joy to be around. I don't know. I guess he could have played pro football, but he chose baseball, and I think he made the right decision because he's done pretty well for himself.
Yeah, I mean, he was a big-time receiver. And, you know, even now, the talk of him, well, you're around him a lot. You're right. He does exude that football mentality. You know what I mean? He walks around. Doesn't he walk around like a football player?
Yeah, he really does. You know, everything about him. You know, he broke in with Lou Piniella, who was a tough guy, old school manager. So he still has that old school mentality about approaching the game that we've talked about with you and Bill before. You know, you have a job, you want to hold it down, and it was a different era. And he's kind of a throwback that way. That he's really, you think he would have been playing 30, 40 years ago with the mentality he brings to baseball.
You guys follow the draft at all? Bill, did you follow it?
I followed the draft the first day. That was really the first time I watched the whole thing. Of course, everybody's eager to watch something live, and that was pretty interesting. And the stories that came about the draft, of course, all the hardships were really meaningful. But, you know, Samardzija, getting back to Samardzija, don't forget the hit he hit on Michael Morris when the Harper fight went on. I mean, that was a nasty hit. And, of course, Morris was out for a while with a concussion.
That's right, Bill. You're exactly right. And you know, I can't help that you mentioned Bo Jackson. I wonder how good he would have been in baseball, because I've seen Barry at the top of his game, and he was just, you know, when he was hitting those home runs, he was strong as Hercules, and he had that baseball skill. And Bo, if he just played baseball, there's no telling. And he had his health. Obviously, the hip went bad on him, and he couldn't do both. I think this guy could have broke all kinds of records with power, speed, and he could have been at the top of the game, and certainly had a chance to be a Hall of Famer. I mean, that's a lot of ifs, right? Staying healthy, and obviously he's playing two sports, but that's how talented he was with all his skills and the way he approached sports.
Well, now, here's the other end of the spectrum. And, Jason, you know, Jason Stark for The Athletic, and Bill, I know you read The Athletic well. I don't know if you do or not. But remember, he had the home run, the Benji Molina home run, where Burris got in the middle of that. So then he has the next crazy home run, Bartolo Colon. And, whoa, Bill, I'm going to ask you about, is there a crazier home run than that guy hitting a home run? I mean, really.
That was something else, because we all know Colon was never a good hitter, but every pitcher finds the meat of the barrel of the bat sooner or later. Of course, my guy's Atlee Hammaker. Atlee used to go up there with a right-hand batting helmet on, bat left-handed. I mean, Atlee was that kind of hitter, and sure enough, he'd hit one in a gap or whatever, but that home run Colon hit, I think ESPN ran that 100 times just from the way he hit it, how deep it was, and of course he ran into it, so he did hit a home run. But, you know, he was that guy. He was that kind of guy that everybody looked at because he was out of shape, he was overweight. But, boy, he put some numbers on the board as a pitcher.
Yeah, I agree with you, Bill. He, you know, he's a guy I saw earlier in his career, obviously, and he hit the home run, you know, near the end of his career, but he was a terrible hitter. I mean, when he started off hitting, he was one of those guys, you know, you go over the scouting reports and you'd say, just go right after him. Throw the ball down the hole. You'd run crash plays. He couldn't hit the ball. And you know what? He got better when he got into his 40s, which was amazing. And all of a sudden, he was starting to make more contact. And, you know, it was never a pretty swing, but he does have the size and the strength. And as you said, Bill, he ran into one, and he hit one out. So
I love it. You know, baseball's got a stat for everything, and they had this in the column. It said the lowest career batting average for a pitcher with one home run. Right, and this is like with 300 at bats. He's got the lowest, 0.84. Then comes, well, you should know this, a former Red Sox, Ike DeLock, 0.86. Ike DeLock pitched in 58-59, so I'm teasing you on that one.
But, yeah, thank you. Lasky knows that one. Bill knows about it.
No, I'm not that early yet, Ron. I'm a little bit earlier.
Hoyt Wilhelm, 0.88. And Hoyt Wilhelm, of course, you guys know Hoyt Wilhelm and the knuckleballer. They said his knuckleball was the toughest pitch ever to control. That's how good he was. But he hit a home run, you know, we've not talked about this, I think, in his first at bat, never hit another one. And he, 0.88 for him. And then a guy who played for like 20 years, George Brunet. And I don't know if that ever came up with us on the show. He hit 0.89. So those are the four worst ever in batting average with home runs. So I thought that was pretty good. A couple of things that happened in baseball this week, one of which was an interesting moment, and I've done shows on it. And today is the anniversary of the day. Remember, Bill, and when Rick Monday grabbed the flag away from two guys mm-hmm. in the outfield, that they were going to burn the flag, and he came swooping in and grabbed it. Remember that?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, Bill.
I tell you what happened this year, Marty, is I got to interview Rick Monday on one of our shows with Vita, and we touched on that. And to this day, it still is in his heart why he was so upset about them burning the American flag. And he was playing center field that day. He said, I didn't care if they were going to shoot me, knife me, or whatever. I was getting that flag sooner or later. And sure enough, he went out and snagged it. And of course, the world came around him as a hero, and that was one of the biggest things. Rick Monday to this day, he won't even talk about his career. He really says that's my number one. Everybody asked me about that question because it was such an important thing at the time of his career as well as America, saving the American flag. And that was at Wrigley, I do believe, correct?
No, I think it was in L.A. He was a Cub in those days, but it was in L.A., and they had a big ceremony in Wrigley later on. It was 1976. That it happened at Dodger Stadium in the fourth inning. And it's amazing. I did a show with Davey Lopes about it. And Davey, you know, people's memories get a little clouded. I'll never forget Davey Lopes saying that he was actually playing on the Dodgers with Rick Monday at that time, which, of course, Rick Monday was already a Cub. But Davey Lopes remembered it. And it was one of those moments, Woe. I imagine today people are more careful to tell you not to get involved with it.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, you know, I saw the video on there. And I think if that happened today, you'd have a very similar response from the crowd and the nation, someone trying to burn the flag. I mean, it may have been a little bit at that point in time back there, a little bigger event. But I think that his actions doing that will carry the test of time. And that will be one of the all-time, you know, favorite things that you've seen with fans on the field. Because today, you're right, Marty, you know, Major League Baseball security comes in every spring. And, you know, they want the players, the coaches, everybody to stay away from these knuckleheads that jump on the field. And, you know, you don't know what their purpose is. You don't know if they're out there to hurt somebody. Most of the time they're not, but you really don't know. There's been so many incidences with crazies jumping on the field. They want you to stay away and let the security take care of it. So, you know, it wouldn't happen today because the players are, you know, trained and taught to just stay away from the guy and let security take care of it.
Bill,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, Bill, did you ever have anyone, a fan come after you or anything
game? The biggest thing that was going on in my career was Morgana. When she'd run out, the kissing bandit would come out and kiss players, you know, the certain key players. You remember her, Marty.
Yes,
but, the question I wanted to ask Ron was when Angel Pagan, when that fan came out to left field and he body slammed him. I know you were there remembering that moment. Do you remember that? And why did Angel do that? Because, I mean, fearful of his life, but, boy, he body slammed the guy.
No, you're right. I mean, you know, people are going to react in different ways, you know, even though they're told to stay away. You know, Angel had the nickname the Crazy Horse for a reason. So when that fan went out there, he wasn't worried about staying away. He was going to take things into his own hands. And, you know, I would imagine if someone was out there and they were getting ready to burn a flag, maybe a player would intervene even today.
Yeah.
Because they'd look at that as being crazy. But, no, that's a good memory there, Bill. I forgot all about that. Angel did come in and tackle that guy, and he did the security's job for him.
I want to get back to Morgana.
Some players used to run towards her, Marty. I think some players used, when they saw her coming, they'd run towards her.
It's true. for some reason, Pete Rose comes to mind with Morgana. I don't know, maybe something happened there. But, the kissing bandit, she would run out on the field, and nobody, you know, she'd run out and kiss the pitcher, and that would be it.
And she was large and stout, so that was one of the biggest things that made her attractive that everybody looked at. But you didn't see security guards tackle her. They kind of just escorted her off the field. But she had that one thing in mind. She always wanted to kiss a player. It was a pitcher, a catcher, a third baseman, or whatever. But that was her big thing back in the day. I think she did more of that down as a Dodger, wasn't it, Marty? She was down in L.A. a lot doing it.
Well, see, that I don't remember, but yeah, that's the good part of baseball history. You know, people send me stuff all the time, and this week I got a baseball card of you sent to me online, of you as a Hawaii Islander. I think it was in the 80s, somewhere in the 80s, and you got the stash and everything, and it lit up the internet. I think right away you had like 300 likes of the picture. Did you get to see it?
Yeah, yes, I did, because my phone blew up. I had Crawford and even Joe Panic and a few people comment on that beautiful mustache I had. So I got some texts about it. So I did check it out, and that's back in the heyday. As a matter of fact, I've had so much time on my hands here now, and you know, I'm sick of working in my yard. Okay, it was fun for 3 weeks, but now I'm out of the yard. I'm staying in the house, and I'm going through all the closets, and I pulled up a picture of me in Hawaii hitting a home run, and it's like I don't have many pictures from back then. So I hit, and I'm rounding third base, and I'm shaking the third base coach's hand, who was the manager. And you guys both know who this man is, and he was our Triple A manager that year in 1983, and it's Tom Treblehorn, who still works for the Giants in the minor leagues for us. What a great baseball guy! Yeah, he was our manager in Triple A at that time.
Yeah, I love it. Then someone sent me a picture of you in Clinton. What were you doing in Clinton? Were you a player there or a coach there? What were you doing there?
You know what? When I took a coaching job with the Giants, they didn't give me the managing job until the second year. So my very first year in 89, when I retired as a player, I went to coach in Clinton, Iowa, with Jack Mull was the manager. And
Jack
the thing
Mull,
I remember about Clinton, yeah, Jack Mull, another good baseball man, and was with the Giants a long time. But they had penny parking meters back then. When you pull in the town, you put a penny in the parking meter, and that seems like 100 years ago. I mean, you don't see that today, but yeah, I spent 1 year in Clinton, then I moved on to manage the San Jose Giants for the next 2 years.
People send you stuff, the people send you cards and things you didn't see before.
I get the fan mail. There's a couple fans out there, and I don't get a lot of stuff that I haven't seen before. I just got a call today from a reporter in Pittsburgh. He's doing a story on Twitter about the 84 Cubs when they clinched the playoffs in Pittsburgh. You know, we had 5,000 people in the stands, and they were all Cub fans, and they were rooting against us, our home, and playing in Three Rivers. So I spoke to him today, but I don't get a lot of stuff, but I get it here and there.
Bill, you still get stuff?
Yeah, you know, I wanted to ask Ron, and I'll chime in after this. Do you remember your first Major League Baseball card that you got from Topps? Do you remember seeing it, and then it was a year after you're in a big league, and you get the next year? Because I tell you what, I see it, and it just, you know, you laugh at it now, since 20, 30 years, maybe more than that. But I remember that first card, and a lot of people send baseball cards to get them signed. And, of course, the gracious way to do it is sign it, move it back, and send it back. And but it's that first baseball card, just like when you first get called up to the big leagues. What do you think, Ron?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Look, we all signed that Topps. They were one of the few, they were like one of the only baseball card companies, and you'd sign that contract. They'd give you $500, and it was just a lot of money at that point in time to print your card. And I'll tell you, Bill, an interesting story about this, because I was in the big leagues and I never saw my major league card. I got the check. I saw the check, and I was happy about that. And a couple of years went by, and I finally called Topps, and I asked them, hey, can you send me my card? And they told me they never printed it. So I'm like Rodney Dangerfield. I just don't get any respect. And I never did. They never printed my card. You know, I guess I should have gave the money back, but I spent that money a long time ago.
Well, but in the big leagues you get cards, don't you? Is it with the Giants?
Coaching, yeah, I sign a lot of those, obviously, here in the Bay Area and people around the country. I have coaching baseball cards, but as a player, they you know, there wasn't all these card companies, and then there was about 10 years later the flurry of all the baseball cards, right, and the collectors and how many card companies they were, and that was a big deal for about 5 years, and that kind of all went by the wayside now, and it's changed again. But Topps, they were the first ones, and they're certainly still around doing it.
Yeah, it's fun. Well, you just look at the picture, and it brings you back to the story, and that's what baseball is all about. It's the stories, and all you got to do is see the picture of Bill, you pitching, and when you played, and, of course, Ron, to see you in a card, you just say, okay, I can just imagine what was going on. This year, one of the fans made a card of me, which was, did I show you that? Well, I think I showed it to you.
Yeah, I think you did, yeah, yeah.
I got a lot of hair.
Go ahead. Yeah, yeah. No, you show me that card. You did have a lot of hair, a little hippie-ish down there. And were you down in Miami at that time, or were you up in Brooklyn?
No, I was here. That picture was like 1978, somewhere in that range. And I was already playing softball. Hey, what are you talking about? The picture how about you with the soccer picture with the long hair?
Yeah, I shouldn't have brought up that long hair, should I? Hey, Bill,
you're in trouble now, man.
Yeah, I love it. I love those old pictures. You know, when people send it to me or to you guys, it's always a lot of fun. You know, again, you know, preparing for shows, I always like to look at this day in baseball history. And this one jumped out at me, and I'm going to ask both of you if you ever came across anything as crazy as this. 1981, Maury Wills, of course we know who that is, hoping to give his pitchers an edge, gets the Kingdome's ground crew to enlarge the batter's box, making it a foot closer to the mound. So before the game, A's skipper Billy Martin shares his suspicions with the umpire Bill Kunkel, who used to be a pitcher in the American League. And the American League suspends the exposed Mariners manager for 2 games for doctoring the batter's box. How about that?
Wow. That's a good one.
Yeah, Bill, I mean, we all, you know, have tried to, you know, make the field to our liking. That's like about, I think it was about 10, 12 years ago, baseball came out with a universal policy on the fields because, you know, Bill, you remember how many of the teams with speed, they had a guy like Otis Nixon on their tub. They would bend the foul lines. They'd tilt them so any bunt that would go down, you let it roll, it would stay fair. And we did stuff like that at our ballpark and, you know, grow the grass longer because we didn't have quite the speed that other teams had. So the ball goes through the infield a little bit slower. So, you know, we were able to do some things like that over the years, but I've never heard about moving the batter's box forward. That's pretty good. Maybe we ought to look into that one.
Yeah, made the batter's box a foot bigger so you get closer to the mound and, I guess, get a ball before it breaks.
Well, you know, one of the first things that happened to me when my rookie year in 82 was I was pitching in Philadelphia and Don McMahon was my pitching coach. And we were warming up in the bullpen, and they moved home plate back. So it wasn't 60 feet 6 inches. It was like 8 inches. And I was throwing my slider, and my slider kept going in the dirt. And I'm like, Don, what's going on? I don't know why I can't control my slider. Sure enough, Don goes, man, it looks far from me. Sure, he measured it out, big Don McMahon. And he goes, I'll be damned. I wonder how many pitchers warmed up here. And it was illegal, but it was so weird. You know, you're in the big leagues and you're warming up at Veterans Stadium and here they're squeezing the bullpen on you. But it was amazing to the point of Don McMahon. And I was just more or less asking him why I couldn't get my slider over. And sure enough, he goes, well, this looks so damn long. And sure enough, it was. But, you know, back in the day, they did a lot of things like that.
Oh, yeah. Hey, yeah, well, what about Cincinnati? How about all the rumors about Cincinnati?
Well, people relaying signs and all that. What really comes to mind, I mean, it happened in Cincinnati with the man and mound, and that's why Major League Baseball got involved. But long before, remember the mound in L.A.? The Dodgers had that, you know, that mound was, it seemed to be higher. Every pitcher that got on it thought it was a taller mound, and that's when Major League Baseball started to go out and measure the mounds because people complained about that. I remember early in my coaching career, not only that, some of the teams would make the bullpen mounds, not like Bill said, but a little different. They make it flatter. So you'd go from a flat mound in the bullpen on the visiting side, and then you got to go out to the game mound, which is totally different. And the Dodgers were notorious for that. And I remember having conversations with Rags and everybody else about how different the mounds were. And Major League Baseball finally had to come in and regulate this stuff and check up on it. And thank goodness they do, because as we know, whether it's, you know, the Houston and the Red Sox, you know, using the video, trying to get an edge. I mean, everybody's trying to get an edge one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I remember. Well, Cincinnati, for me, I mean, was it Matt Cain? A couple of people kept saying the bullpen mound was different than the game mound. And when they got in the game, there was a problem with it. I remember that.
I think it was along the same line as what we're saying. The height of the mound, it was flat. It was totally different than the game mound.
And they do that. They did that a lot in the big leagues and the minor leagues, too, that flatten out the bullpen mounds. And that does make a big difference when you're trying to snap curveballs and breaking balls. And then you go on the big mound and it's 2-3 inches higher. And then you only have 5 pitches to warm up. So you have to make those adjustments quickly. The first thing you do, you feel like you're on the top of a hill throwing. And you're right, Ron. Dodger Stadium was like that. And those guys thrived on that because they could pitch on it all the time. So, you know, the other one was Wrigley Field when Maddox and all the sinker ballers, they'd grow the grass higher when those guys would pitch. And the next time it would be shaved down to nothing. So, I mean, they did a lot of things, but that was the key points of back there. The grounds crew would help the players, and they probably still do that.
Yeah, does anybody supervise Greg Elliott? I mean, I know you chat with him, you know, the head groundskeeper, but does anyone really ever supervise anything?
Well, they run checks on that, and if somebody complains about it, you know, they're going to do things. The other thing, you know, with Greg, but they had more leeway. I mean, he could cut the grass however he wants, you know, the cuts, and he can grow the grass, you know, longer if he wants to. But it's kind of out of the game, but there are certain standards. So when MLB comes in, they measure the mounds. They look at certain things and make sure they're conformed to where they want them. Otherwise, it would be a free-for-all for all these people trying to get these advantages. So I think it's a good thing that they've tried to keep that under control.
Now, look, Sam Spear, our good friend, remembers Alvin Dark with Maury Wills. Wills would steal bases on the Giants to drive him crazy, and they made first base like a swamp. And, you know, and then they had to stop the game and put out that crazy dust and all that stuff and redo the whole area around first base because Wills couldn't run. Nobody could run.
You did that to speedsters at Candlestick Park. They used to do that when the Cardinals came in. When you had Vince Coleman, Willie McGee, Tom Herr, they'd water that infield on a couple times during the game, and it would just mainly right in first, second, right where they took the leads off. And all the pitchers were like, put more on. Those guys could fly with that team. That was one of the best running teams there was.
All right, last one on baseball history in today's date. Today was the debut back in the 70s of the Philly Fanatic. Maybe one of the funniest, mascots ever. I don't know, you guys, Bill, did you ever run in with the Fanatic, or Woe ever have a run in with the Fanatic?
Ron probably sees him a lot more than I did, but back in my day, as a young guy, he'd let all of them let him pick on Joe Morgan and Darrell Evans, and let the older guys, he'd always be picking on Frank or Danny Ozark. But he was funny. He was hilarious. He was kind to the players. He was always good to the fans, and he was really that top-line guy. Of course, the chicken in San Diego, and then I go back to Max Pacton in the minor leagues. He was really the first clown prince of baseball, as they called him, wear number zero and do all his antics on the field. And those were the fun times in the minor leagues, seeing some of those clowns come around.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with you, Bill. The two best I've ever seen, obviously Max Pacton, what I broke into. I mean, he was a great guy, too. He'd come in the clubhouse, and he'd give you that stick. He goes, I don't know why I'm doing this. He goes, you know, I look like a fool out there. And he'd go out there and act a fool, and he was hilarious. But he had such a good attitude about it. And the Fanatic, though, Marty, now he's the best I've ever seen. I mean, to this day, 23 years going to Philly to watch him. And I'll go out early, like a lot of the players go out early, because he does the lineup still, right? He'll do the home lineup and he'll do the visitors lineup. And, of course, he'll imitate certain guys. You know, if somebody's real short, when they mention his name, the announcer says, you know, batting leadoff Ray Durham, he'll go down on his knees and look around because he's real short. You know, he's doing something with everybody, a swing and a miss for somebody that's maybe struggling. And, of course, the one that we all see and the players wait for is he does Boach's head a little bit. He goes down there and he walks like Boach, and then he leans to the side and he falls straight on his head, and then he can't pick his head up. He keeps trying to pick his head up. So every time we go into Philly, he would throw that at Boach, and it doesn't get old. And Boach is a good sport about it, but he's really, really good.
Very good. Funny. All right, we'll take a break. The other thing I want to talk about tonight, and I was thinking about this week, A's Giants. And, you know, Interleague's been around since 97, and there are moments in this rivalry. And, you know, we talk A's Giants, but the games are interesting when you look at some of the games that have taken place and some of the names that are involved. So maybe when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about A's Giants and some of those memorable games that you come across and some of the names. So we'll do that right after this.